Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. Today is Thursday, November 12th, 2015. This week, we complete our series of interviews with Joel Elston to date. This was actually my second interview with Joel, taking place in October of 2014, just a few weeks after the untimely death of his... We'll stop. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. Today is Thursday, November 12, 2015. This week, we complete our series of interviews with Joel Elston to date. This was actually my second interview with Joel, taking place in October of 2014, just a few weeks after the untimely death of his adopted son. It's a noteworthy interview because it not only focuses attention on his son's death, but more importantly, it shows how a grieving person can take steps to turn that grief into remembrances of love and appreciation for the departed person. Here we go with Joel Elston from October 2014.
Along with my co-host, Yoana June Thiessen. Yoana, how you doing? How's your week been?
Good. How are you, Walt?
Doing just fine. Exciting things happening personally in my life. And, of course, we're excited about being live again here on PRN. And you actually had something really exciting this week, too. You celebrate your first wedding anniversary.
That's right. Yes, we did. I can barely hear you. I'm going to try to turn up the volume here a little bit because
My
resident technician is not here right at the moment.
What's my brother doing? No, don't tell us on the air.
No, he's being good. He's making me some ginger tea.
Oh, isn't that nice of him? That's great. Listen, we're trying to get our guest to join us. We're trying to connect with him. But in the meantime, I want to talk a little bit about good news that's been happening lately, and that's why I want to start with your first year anniversary. I think it's pretty cool 1 year you've been married. But I've been searching around, and you know, it's always hard to find good news that's happening. But if you really, really dig, you can actually find good stuff. For instance, this is not something most people are thinking about, but are you aware that oil and gas prices have been falling? Gas prices have been going down. That's good news.
Really? Oh, I so don't pay attention to stuff like that, unfortunately.
Well, that's why we're paying attention to it here. We have to.
Yes,
it's like,
of
you know, the rule. This is the good news, happy station, the happy
Absolutely.
Radio show. You know?
Yes.
Because when you're talking about law of attraction, of course, you want to be talking about happy stuff. Because when you focus on happy stuff, that's what you tend to get.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
We have good news. Looks like we have our guest here, so let's bring him on. Joel Elston is a former compulsive gambler who hit bottom badly. In fact, it was so bad, he actually had to eat out of a dumpster. Can you imagine that? You only eating out of a dumpster?
Wow, yeah, that's unbelievable.
He actually had to do that, but he turned his life around. And he did it with the help of a lot of very good people, people who were providing therapeutic assistance to him and so forth. But also he found through applying the law of attraction in his own case. And later on, he learned from that and decided to apply it in the case of other people to the point where today he is now a therapist in private practice in Virginia, incorporating the law of attraction in his therapy practice. How cool is that?
That is awesome, man. LOA works.
It does work, and he's going to talk more about it. So, Joel, can you hear us?
I can hear you fine, Walt. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. It's been a while, bud. We talked like, a year and a half ago, something like that. But it's good to be catching up with you again.
Yes, it certainly is. I'm so glad to be here this evening.
This audience doesn't know a whole lot about your original story other than the summary I just gave. Why don't you flesh it out a little bit for us? Tell us, you know, a little bit more about what that horrible period was like and how you came out of a really bad place and into a very, very, very good place.
Absolutely, Walt. And at any point in time, you can interrupt me if I go on too long. I tend to do that. I'm so enthusiastic about how the law of attraction has really changed every aspect of my life. And for years, I suffered from a severe gambling addiction. And I was working with my father in the insurance business in Florida for many years, and it the the addiction was taking over, and I eventually started stealing money from the company we were working for, and he had to fire me. My father had to fire me because I wasn't able to stop gambling, and I kept using money that wasn't mine. I ended up going through just a series of events that just seemed unbelievable, and the one you referenced, I was actually found myself in Las Vegas homeless. I would love to say that only happened one time, but I was homeless four times in Las Vegas.
Oh,
and
wow.
After about 4 days of not eating, I've used the term in the past, I'm starving. I never really understood that concept of starving until I actually went 4 days without food in Las Vegas, wandering aimlessly in the middle of August. And Las Vegas in the middle of August is not the most pleasant, hospitable
place
to be.
No, not at all.
So, and really, I'm a spoiled, wealthy kid that's homeless in Las Vegas and not knowing what to do. I have no coping skills, and realizing I'm going to have to get some food into my body. One of the things that I understood was, and I remembered because I worked briefly for McDonald's when I was a kid in college, was they throw away a lot of food. So I ended up going on the Strip. There's a McDonald's, the Las Vegas Strip. There's a McDonald's. And I went behind there, and I don't want to describe exactly how nasty it was. It would really upset your audience, probably. But it was, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to understand the smell and what's involved. And I literally took a cheeseburger out of the dumpster and ate it. The cheese was crunchy, and the bread was hard, and I ate it, and I remember actually saying, if there is a God, I cannot ever understand how I could be suffering. Now, all of this was my own doing. I was gambling my money away and not living a life that had any moral character attached to it whatsoever. But I do remember that day in particular, because if I have five worst days of my life at that time, eating out of a trash can was in the top one or two.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually made it back to Florida and continued. It would be a much better story if I told you, hey, I stopped gambling at that point. That was a great lesson. That unfortunately wasn't the case. I continued to gamble, quite a bit more and lost quite a bit more money and just kept spiraling down in my addiction. I found recovery, and as you mentioned, I went to a 12-step program in the beginning that dealt with gambling, and I moved on and found some great quality people, and I eventually even became a counselor. But one thing that I did notice when I would go to these 12-step meetings, I picked up on this early, there would often be meetings where I would hear people talk about how miserable they were because they weren't able to gamble, and they would tell their stories with all negativity attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually wanted to gamble worse after I would go to some of those meetings.
Wow.
I didn't understand that, you know, the as I now know, the law of attraction, it doesn't differentiate between don't gamble and gamble. It's just hearing gamble, gamble,
right.
Gamble. And you know, that desperate state that brought about. So the meetings themselves, while I did find quite a bit of the content helpful, there were a portion of it that I couldn't at the time make sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized and that is not just limited to the 12-step programs dealing with gambling. It's sort of universal that a lot of times you'll hear people tell the war stories, and not that that's not therapeutic on some level, but when you live in the negativity, you tend to invite more negativity, and you see people that are miserable in quote unquote recovery, and there's a piece of that that never made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I took some training and I became a counselor dealing with addiction in general, I accidentally ran across, I knew I was searching for stuff for a long time in my life. I felt there was a missing piece in my life. I'm also a recovering Southern Baptist, I like to tell people. I still believe in God, of course, but I certainly don't subscribe to a lot of the stuff that's so punitive and so negative and what a lot of religion has associated with it. But I had it never felt right that, you know, you're going to do this or you're going to burn in hell if you don't do it exactly this way. And I wanted, there was a yearning for something. And along the way, through a chain of events, I ended up I was actually at a yogurt shop in Richmond, Virginia, and I saw a thing about become a certified life coach. And I was, you know, even though I was a counselor, the life coaching, and I've heard about that, so I love to take classes and education, so I signed up for that. And I was introduced to a lady who's now passed away, but she was my mentor in the law of attraction. Her name was Dee. And she started just telling me about the law of attraction and how it works. And in the beginning, it sounded good, and it sounded actually right. And this yearning that I had for this knowledge, I then started investigating it on all levels. I read the book The Secret, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, a lot of other documentation, and some of this is ancient stuff. And even some of the religious texts, which talk about if you believe and you, we sort of bring about our reality. And the concept felt so real to me, I eventually put it together that I would love to bring a treatment component to addiction and really to any act of life. I mean, not just addiction, but at the time I was in addiction, of maybe bringing this law of attraction concept to help people with addiction, understanding how we get into this cycle of thinking. And the law of attraction is going to work whether we want it to work or not. So the idea that we can either get on board with it and learn how to utilize it to our benefit, or we can just sort of be a victim of it, it's our choice. But the law of attraction doesn't need us to believe in it for it to work. Just like gravity doesn't care if I believe in it, it works.
Right.
So as I started applying that at the time, I was envisioning a treatment center where I would be able to do this. And part of my vision board was I wanted a treatment center that would help addicts and use a holistic approach and the law of attraction as we went along. And I was contacted by a gentleman that was opening up a treatment center, and he described the perfect setting for me. And he asked me to come be a director at his facility, which I was glad to do. And I was there for 5 years, and we did some really quality work along those able to incorporate that. And then I felt that I wanted to take this even further. I wanted to make it more of a center focus of our practice instead of a sort of a side idea. And that sort of led to some disagreements, and while I certainly am grateful for my time there, it seemed like a good time to go into private practice for myself. And I knew this was going to be successful immediately when I did it. And I was actually sort of, there wasn't that moment of doubt, Walt, where I was, I hope this works, or it felt so right. And
you were really right in that vortex, as they call it. You had total confidence, total belief. There was no doubt at all in your mind. That's really a very strong place to be in.
Right. It did not even, there wasn't a moment that, and I literally left a very high paying job and really just because I wanted to go further with this concept. And there was never a moment that I actually took a couple of weeks off, and I opened up. There's some counselors and a doctor that have a set of offices together, and I was sort of interviewing where I would like to be, and it was a natural fit. They wanted someone there with this experience, and they're very much into this idea. So it's a group of us. Even though I'm in an individual practice, I get a lot of referrals, and I was shocked. I was expecting, I was blessed to be in a position that if I didn't make any money for a year or two, I was okay. But I was just shocked. The second week I was there, I actually had to put people back. I was getting referrals from people, and I wanted to see, 30 clients a week is a lot. When my sessions run between an hour and a half, and I want to make sure that I'm actually engaged and I really get involved. I did 32 sessions on the second week I was open.
And wow.
Without any advertising other than me letting people know that I'm in private practice and here's what I'm doing. And I'm not now just limited to addiction. I'm in a larger category of life coaching and health coaching. And I'm just as passionate about natural health. And I think this all sort of fits together. I believe the body can heal itself when you give it the right fuel. You know, you get the junk out of your life. I think that the body has that, and it goes right along with the law of attraction. And along the way, I've also, it is not exactly the same thing, but there's a big movement in psychology about positive psychology.
Yeah, which
mimics the law of attraction, and it doesn't seem to have the what I've defined sort of as a spiritual component, or considering it a law, but it also talks about the psychology of positivity, and it very much of it is the same thing. So by implementing that into people's lives, and you know, I've just seen amazing things happen with some of my clients that have. You know, I had a gentleman that the second week that I was working, he came to me, and his mother actually sent him to me, and he had a job with an IT company that went out of business. And he was devastated. He had a $75,000 a year job that all of a sudden was gone, and he had no, and his field seemed to be dwindling, and he was stuck on the concept of the loss of the job.
Mm-hmm.
And he was collecting unemployment, in my personal opinion, no disrespect to anyone on unemployment in our audience, I think unemployment in itself is, I can't make it, and while it can be a nice safety net for a little while, it also sort of works against you in the law of attraction.
Well, sure, and, because it's a crutch. It's a kind of way of defending against having to actually do something to get off the crutch.
Exactly. So I went out to this gentleman's house, and he lives in the rural sections of Richmond, Virginia. And I went out, and we were talking, and he wasn't hearing anything. He said, I can't find a job in my field. And I go, well, let's stop thinking that way, and let's figure out what we're going to do. There's a need, there's a void, there's something out there that we could fill in, and you're going to be able to do this. This is, that reminds you, this is a little over a year ago, Walt.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were talking, he lives on this road, and he said, I got to go over to the neighbors. I'm taking the garbage to the dump. And I said, well, you don't have – I was sort of shocked that, you know, they didn't have garbage men coming out. I haven't lived rurally in a while. So I'm like, oh, okay. And he said, well, I usually take everybody up on the streets garbage. And I said, well, how big of an area – does not have access to garbage. He said, most of the place out here does. I said, what if you charged everybody $25 a week or a month or whatever number makes sense, pick up their garbage and take it in? Not going through the whole thing, but he said, well, that's not a bad idea. So we talked about it. He set a business plan together. He just went up and down and left his card. He now has three full-size garbage trucks, and he has a rural waste management system that is making three times the money he was making before in less than a year.
Wow.
That's funny. That is really wild.
Well, and we implemented a lot. You know, and I said, what are you after? What do you want? Instead of focusing on the loss of the job, focus on the opportunity that now exists because there is no longer you're having to work 40 hours a week. He told me the other day, he doesn't have to put, he goes in every day, but he doesn't have to go in. The company runs itself. And is very profitable, and he's actually has heard from a larger, much larger company that wants to buy him out now. And he very well, in less than a year, could be wealthy off of something that he thought was the worst day of his life. And when you understand how the law of attraction, like when things happen, you can't change what has happened. However, your perspective of what has happened is 100% in your control. And when you use the law of attraction to look at it through the set of eyes of what is the positive from this? What am I going to be able to gain from this? It changes everything. And you know, when you're focused on the negative, it just keeps bringing more negative.
Well, you mentioned the negative. Let me touch on that for a moment, particularly given how much success you've had, because you've had tremendous success since you opened this private practice for yourself. I mean, first of all, congratulations on that. That's a fantastic result.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about a conversation I had just yesterday with a friend. We were talking about how difficult it can be if you're in a really bad negative spiral to find those positives to be working on and to actually see your way out of the negative spiral. Because you know how it goes. It becomes a thing where everything that you look at everything that you think about, you begin to think about trying to look at something positively, and you find yourself leading yourself right back to the negative arguments again because you feel trapped by your own fears. So when
Absolutely.
You're talking with somebody who's in that kind of spiral, how do you help them break through it? How do you help them snap out of it?
Well, Walt, you've identified the single biggest problem. It isn't just as easy as, okay, I'm positive, where's my money? It doesn't work
yeah,
that
right.
way. It would be wonderful
if it did.
but what happens is the law of attraction doesn't really go by what you're saying as much as what you're believing. I would love to be an NBA player right now. I'm a 52-year-old man, 250 pounds. I do powerlifting, but the idea of me being on the court, I don't believe it on any level. So I can try to attract that all I want. I don't believe it. Deep down, I don't believe it. So I know that that could never happen for me. When I have somebody in the negative spiral, where we have to begin, I start with a state of gratitude. Everything begins with gratitude. You can't be depressed and negative and be sincerely grateful at the same time. The two cannot coexist at the same time. So I start by bringing people to a place of gratitude, and I have yet to meet anyone who hasn't been able to find gratitude. It's difficult early, but there are, you know, we're also blessed and we don't realize it, but we're in an environment where the news is negative. I mean, we hear about all these horrible events happening overseas and poverty and all this, and so you're inundated with all of this, and in your own personal situation, you start to believe you're cursed, and this negativity becomes a spiral downward that, again, this is the law of attraction at work on the other side.
Right.
Very much like when I went into business for myself, I was spiraling upward. There was never a moment that I was not believing, and this wasn't arrogance, it's just I felt it was going to happen, and it did. The same thing happens on the other side. If you are conditioned by year, and this goes back to childhood, the negative dialogue that we have developed over the years, that inner dialogue where you talk to yourself all day, well, that can't work. I'm not good at this. I can't. So that goes on. That has been conditioned. A lot of that was handed down by our parents. Great people, but at the same time, they didn't intend to, but we picked up their fears and their beliefs and their disbeliefs and all that. We've gotten into that condition of negativity. You'll often hear something, well, how's your health? I feel good, knock on wood. Well, that's actually negative.
It is, yeah.
If they knock on wood, like, oh, by just random luck, I'm feeling good. Let me knock on some wood to make that stay happen. And versus, no, I'm very healthy. I feel great. And that negative thinking is the hardest thing I deal with when pulling people out. But I start with a state of gratitude. I have all my clients do this. I write five things I'm grateful for every day of my life. Since I stopped gambling in 1995, I have written down five things I'm grateful for every single day of my life. And I do that the first thing in the morning. I start out in a state of gratitude. And that begins my day. So if I can get people to start through, and in the beginning, even if you don't believe it, you start using that inner dialogue. There's all types of supporting stuff. Neuro-linguistic programming talks about how you reprogram your brain. Well, in a sense, you can do that by changing that inner dialogue, being sincerely grateful. And then once you get, it's like the momentum. You use the word correctly, spiral down. But when you get it going in the other direction, it's slow at first, but it's like a freight train, and it'll start to pick up very quickly.
Oh, yeah, it picks up momentum, yeah.
Yeah.
And no matter which direction you're going, whether you're going in the positive direction or the negative direction, it can pick up momentum either way.
Absolutely. And you know, when I'm saying this, and anybody that's listening, I don't ever want to give the idea that this is just so easy and you snap your fingers and do this. This is this takes practice. This takes a belief. And where you're, you know, I was skeptical in the beginning of some of this stuff because it sounds so good, but it can't really be that way. But then, you know, I often hear people say, well, if the law of attraction, you know, what do kids who are abused, or what about people in Africa who are starving, And, you know, it gets to, you start saying, yeah, that makes sense. And you start to have that self-doubt, which then begins into that, brings you into that negative spiral. And by getting to the place where you're at, you begin with your state of gratitude. And that then begins the positive direction. And then you start looking and becoming very appreciative for each, you know, each movement forward, or even the movements backwards, because no matter what happens in our life, and since we've talked, I have had just a tremendous tragedy in my personal life, and I'll get to that in a minute.
Save that one actually for after the break, because we're going to have a break coming up soon, and that's going to take a while to talk about that one.
Absolutely, absolutely. But my point behind mentioning that was the law of attraction is something that I now understand is at work every moment of my day, and I'm using it. It's my job to know how to use it the correct way. It's my job to bring it to a point of where it benefits my life, because it's taking place whether I'm participating or not, and that negative thinking is a way of participating that keeps everything going down. So the ongoing project for me in my life is just reminding myself the blessings that I have in my life, that I have an abundance on all areas of my life, and that just brings more abundance. And it has never failed me, and it can't. If I drop a pin on the ground 1,000 times, it's going to fall to the ground 1,000 times. It's guaranteed. That's the law of gravity. The law of attraction works equally the same consistent way, but it goes on the thoughts are a piece of it, but it's what you believe deep down. It's that inner core, the energy you're putting out. And I don't want to start sounding too woo-woo, but it's what you're really believing. You can't go from making $50,000 a year to $1,000,000 a year unless you really believe that's possible. If you don't think that's possible, then no, it can't happen. In the case of my friend who just sort of almost did that, he quickly, a couple months into it, realized what he had, and it just took off. And so there's really no limit to this. The law of attraction is not limited. It's only limited by our perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
it can only go to what we truly believe. And,
well, Joel,
and that's the key.
Joel, I'm going to stop you because we're about time for our break. And then after the break, I'm going to challenge you, because my co-host, Juona, is our resident scientist. And she's going to come at this from a more scientific perspective, I think. She's got a question that we'll see if we can trip you up. So get ready, okay?
I certainly will try, Walt.
All right. This is LOA Today here on PRN, and we will be back after these messages.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Hey, we're happy here on LOA Today. You're on Thursday evening, Walt Simona, bringing all the latest about positivity into your living room, into your ears, into your car, into wherever you are. And we have a very special guest. He's actually somebody who's been on my show previously in its podcast format. Joel Elson, as we talked about earlier, is a former compulsive gambler turned therapist who uses the law of attraction heavily in his practice. And as with anything else, what we're talking about, LOA, I'd love to bring Juona in because Juona is a PhD candidate in one of the neurosciences. And so she always brings the scientific purview to our show. Now, Joel, I will give you a little bit of a relief here because she's also a believer in LOA, so it's not like you have to talk her into anything. But Juona, it's been kind of chomping at the bit to get in here. So what's your question for him, Juona?
Well, hi, Joel, first of all, and I already amazed me at your story. I've heard it before, but hearing it again, it's still so, so amazing. And I was kind of perusing your website, and I noticed that you had a blog post, and in there you mentioned something about being anti-12-step, and I was really curious about that. I want you to talk a little bit about that. But before you do that, my question was, what if, you know, one of your clients is not a believer in LOA, or maybe they've just been practicing negativity for so long, and they may say something to you like, well, maybe you were born that way, or maybe you have the genetic disposition for positivity, and so you can do all those things and create all those things in your life, but maybe I can't because that's not my genetic makeup. You know, how do you respond to something like that?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the question. And my response generally, if somebody were to use that exact statement, that, you know, I would first point out that my biological father committed suicide, my biological grandfather committed suicide, I have an uncle that committed suicide, and I have three other severely heroin-addicted immediate family members. So the idea that my genetics were somehow positive is not necessarily a really good argument. It, just with that. Second, I think that part of negativity is people believing that I'm individually cursed or this wouldn't work for me. That's part of the inherent nature of the negativity. And my goal is to always be able to get, no matter where you're at, we all have separate challenges. I know we are all born with various challenges. One of mine is ADHD. I've overcome it. It's now a gift of mine. A long time it wasn't. But it whatever's going on in your life, I try to get people to a point to seeing, you know, negative thinking doesn't work either. If you don't think positive thinking works, negative thinking's not working well for you either. So usually along the way, I can get them to convert to the idea that positive thinking will never harm your life. Mm-hmm. And I have had, out of the last year specifically, I don't know exactly how many clients I've seen, but I have had two of them that after about four or five sessions, they were not into, they weren't getting it or weren't willing to get it, and I just told them we probably wouldn't need to work together any longer because it wasn't benefiting them to do that. And I certainly don't want to be taking anyone's money that's not benefiting by this. But 98% of the people that I deal with at some point, you know, I worked with a young man that was horribly sexually abused for years and years in foster care. And this was a pro bono case I was doing. And at 19, he was in and out of jail and all these other things. And he actually now is taking training to be a counselor to help other kids. And he's now turned his horrible negative abuse, while that will never be a positive, the experience that he got from that will help other children down the road who had to deal with the same thing he had to deal with. So he's viewing that as a positive. And so the idea that I think everyone can benefit from it, and I don't think anyone is, I don't think there's a genetic predisposal to the law of attraction. I don't think there's a genetic predisposal to gravity. I think it exists the same way.
Absolutely.
I hope that answers your question.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's one thing I've admired about you is your ability to explain the law of attraction so well, and I hope I can be like you when I grow up. But the anti-12 step, what is that all about?
Well, it's sort of what I touched on earlier. And let me be very clear before I get a ton of messages from 12-step people. The general concepts of 12 steps are wonderful. The idea that they bring a wonderful idea of how to organize your life and how to turn your life over to whatever your version of God will be and make amends when you can and do the right thing. My problem with 12 steps is sort of what I touched on in the beginning. When you go to meetings and you hear the negative over and over, I was at a meeting where I heard a gentleman say, he literally said this, he said, I haven't gambled in 20 years and I'm just as miserable and want to gamble just as bad as the day I quit.
Mm.
And I go, well, I'd go gamble then. You know, that wasn't a popular response, by the way, but
that's how a lot of help you are, I tell you.
Yeah. But when I explained it to him, I said, what you've done is you've made recovery a miserable event. You're attracting misery. You're looking at the lack created by not gambling anymore versus the great abundance you have by not gambling anymore. You're focusing on the wrong thing. If I focus on the lack, I invite more lack. And so 12-step programs, I think if they could just get past the what I call just the telling of the war stories over and over, 4% of the people who go to a gambler, four people out of 100, sounds worse this way. They go to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting on day one, 1 year later are clean. 96 people out of 100 relapsed from their first Gamblers Anonymous.
Wow, those are terrible numbers.
Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous is a little better at somewhere between 15 and 16%. Narcotics Anonymous is somewhere between 9 and 10%. And I don't, you know, somebody's going to call and say, no, it's 11, but I'm rough statistics. They're all roughly right. And what I'm, why I point that out is I believe the lack of understanding what the quality recovery attracts. Me not gambling by no means makes me miserable. There's no misery that I can't destroy myself anymore. There's I have great joy in my life now. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's the piece that I would love to get 12-step, and there are some groups that do a really good job with it, but I, a lot of my clients come to me and they're very, they've tried 12 steps. They've tried it and they've been told, you know, if you go to some 12-step meetings, they tell you to, you need to shut up and listen. You don't, you know, they're talked to, they're talked down to, they're not, and that concept for a lot of people turns them off, and, you know, that doesn't get them the help they need. If our goal is to help people, we meet them where they're at, and then we bring them to a place of positivity. And then once they get there, I have the people that I see that get into recovery, and I'm not saying no one's ever had a relapse, but it's just such a higher rate because they're appreciating the abundance brought about by the recovery versus the lack of not being able to practice their addiction anymore. And that's a piece that 12 steps miss. So that's sort of some clarity. I'm not anti 12 steps. I'm anti 12 step program, more of the people in the program that don't get this piece.
Yeah.
I would even say it another way. What you really are, you're pro 12 step that includes positivity as a main part of those 12 steps.
That's a much more positive way to say that, Walt.
That's really what it is. And it makes total sense. I know exactly what you mean, because I went to one 12-step meeting with a CODA meeting one time just because I wanted to see what it was all about, really. And what I saw was pretty much what you described. It was basically an hour-and-a-half long bitch session. You know,
right.
My life is terrible. All these horrible things have happened to me. Okay, you're next. What are you going to say? Well, my life's terrible. All these horrible things have happened to me, too. Yeah, I want to say that, too. Me, too. Horrible things happening over here. You know, it's just this endless cascade of negativity, and I wanted to retch. I wanted to go find a bathroom as soon as possible. So I understand clearly what you mean.
Absolutely, and that's the piece to me that makes the difference is there's some quality help. There's more people helped by Alcoholics Anonymous than, you know, over the years. It's just saved many lives. But I think we could get that satisfaction rate or that rate up where people, when you don't focus on it and you focus on where I'm at now. I don't want to hear, not that it's not relevant. Yes, I know you went through a lot, and it's good to get your story out, but I have been to meetings where I've heard the same story. When I was in Sarasota, Florida, early in my recovery, I went to the same 12-step meeting every Wednesday night, and there's a gentleman there. He's a very nice man, but he told the same miserable story every Wednesday night for 20 minutes he talked.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still miserable. And I'm going, for 5 years, I watched this man be miserable. And he came up to me 5 years into my recovery going, how did you turn your life around so fast? I've been in here for 15 years. I'm like, I don't know. At the time, I knew, but I didn't know how to put it in words at the time. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's the piece that I just so desperately want to get out there to people that have tried. And what I think 12-step meetings have done harm is so many people that have gone, these 96 out of, you know, 100 that failed in Gamblers Anonymous, and they go again and they fail again, then they start to believe they can't be helped. Then they just concede to the addiction. And the reason I use gambling, first of all, is my specific addiction. And also, gambling has the highest suicide rate of all the addictions.
The thing that also catches my attention, too, about 12-step is that one of the famous cliches that comes out of the 12-step programs is a cliche that says repeating the same activity over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what captures my attention about those. I won't even say it's a majority. I think it's probably a minority of 12-step meetings that tend to foster this kind of negativity. But it makes me wonder, are they paying attention to their own cliche? That's the thought that just keeps going through my mind whenever I hear about this.
That's it.
We're not here to bash 12 steps. I don't want to do that too much.
That's what I want to be clear about. I want to be very clear that 12-step programs saved my life. It's what got me in recovery. But along the way, I have seen thousands of people in and out of the rooms, literally thousands of people in and out of the rooms. I have seen 6 people the first year that I went in recovery in 1995 have committed suicide in the last 19 years. And addiction is addiction has 4 outcomes: recovery, prison, insanity, or death. That's the only 4 options for addiction, period. And you can try to debate that, but it's what happens.
And so
if you can get people to understand recovery is not a negative. Recovery is not, it is a positive. It's about abundance. It's about living and feeling and breathing and really getting to the point. I don't need mood altering substances. I don't need to go gamble any longer. It's not a loss. I don't have to do it anymore. It's a relief. Thank goodness.
Now, I do have to bring this up because this is actually the big test. You had a huge test recently in your life that shook your whole system to the core and made you it forced you to re-examine everything, re-examine law of attraction, your relationship to God, your own recovery, what you've been doing with other people, and yet you were able to come through it with flying colors. I'll let you tell it your way. I won't try to give any more build-up, so tell us the story.
And I'll try to get it as concisely as possible because
we have 10-15 minutes left, so we don't have a lot of time.
Okay, good. And so, briefly, if you remembered, I mentioned, and it's relevant if you weren't with us a little bit, we had, I mentioned eating out of a trash can early in Las Vegas.
Right.
Fast forward many, many years. I'd gotten my life back on track. I was working at a treatment center in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and I was also doing volunteer work for a foster care program. I was training foster care parents and adoptive parents on how to and what there can be expected dealing with these children. The director of the program came to me, and they had a young man that came into their care that had been in 17 different foster care placements in a 2-year period. And I think that's the number. It might have been 19, but and the next step at 12 years old was going to be the state hospital, and they asked me would I consider being his foster parent. And I'm like, I don't know if I could do that. And it, making a long story short, I obviously wouldn't be talking about it if I didn't do it. And he became my foster child, and he thrived. He stayed with me. He did amazing things. He turned his life around, and I was so proud of him. And one of the turning points for this young man, his name's TJ. TJ had, we were having the doctor came out to our house, his psychiatrist, and said, "What have you done to make such a change in TJ's life?" And I said, "Well, just consistency, and his drama doesn't affect me. I'm immune to that." And he said, "If you can get TJ to talk about his past," he said, this will change everything for him, because he was horribly neglected. So I finally got him to talk about it one Saturday. He didn't want to talk about it. I said, "TJ, you got to talk about your past." And here was my aha moment that it will make a lot of sense now. I had he got really angry. He's a skinny little kid. And he balled up his fist and he pounded the table and he goes, "How the heck?" And I won't use his words, but "How the heck would you know what it's like to eat out of a trash can?" Well, it was at that moment where I was like, wow, I actually have an answer to that. And I explained to him that him eating out of a trash can was not his fault, but me eating out of a trash can was mine. But if I wanted to know, if I knew the feeling, absolutely. Well, he sat in amazement that we would have that in common. And make a long story short, TJ bonded with me. That was sort of the putting him over the edge state. I adopted TJ. He had an incredible change, and things were going wonderfully. He life could not be any better. He was obviously grown up now, 23 years old. He was engaged. Everything was in his. We sent him to diesel mechanic school, welding school. Things were good. August 29th, TJ was hit by a semi-tractor trailer in South Carolina and killed. And
devastated.
And my world fell apart. And for 2 or 3 days, I did not leave my house. I did not really care about anything. I questioned, like Walt said, I questioned every aspect of what's the point of all this, what makes sense in this. And my training, one thing was odd that I did during this. I wasn't doing anything, but I would write, I still wrote those five things I'm grateful for every morning. I don't know why. I've done it for 19 years, and I wrote in those 3 days, it was, I have a roof over my head, I have food to eat, I have nice clothes, I have plenty of money. It was nothing. I mean, if there was no, that's all I could come up with.
And you were reaching.
I was reaching. I wasn't talking to God. I was not pleased with that plan. And it dawned on me on that Monday that the negative spiral that we were talking about was now back in my life. And it was as drastic as it was the other way. So what I started doing was I started focusing on the incredible joy TJ brought to my life. Every time we talked, he made me laugh, even if he was in trouble. TJ, he had the ability to make me laugh, and I would get so angry because I wanted to be mad at him, and he would make me laugh. And he had just this way that he brought so much joy to my life, and I saw him turn his life around. So I was determined to make the joy TJ brought me much more of a factor than the void of his death. I will never, ever understand why he died. But I do understand the great joy of why he lived. I understand that and what he brought. It brought so much to my life. And he's one of the greatest gifts I've ever had. One of the absolute greatest gifts I've ever had. So my law of attraction is to focus on all of that he brought. And then with that came an incredible peace. And I'm not telling anybody how to mourn. I'm just saying this is what worked for me. And I know that there will always be that peace. And I do, grieving parents, you're never meant to bury your children. And a piece of me died that day. But as TJ actually said to me in a different context, he goes, "You got a lot of pieces." So a piece may have died, but I have a lot of pieces, as he pointed out many times.
Sure.
And that is one of the things that I am so grateful for. So one of my pieces of gratitude was all that I went through, eating out of a trash can, all the trauma, all the stuff that I went through, made me strong enough to be able to handle this. And put it into context, TJ brought incredible happiness to my life, and he still does. So it
and
is.
And TJ was not the only success you had with foster children.
No, I have my youngest son Chris is doing very well. He's 18 now. I adopted him when he was 8. He's doing very well now, and he's obviously devastated by his brother's death.
Sure.
But we're working on that, and he's processing, and he'll be going to. He hadn't decided what training he's going to be doing, but we're going to be doing some type of vocational training in the next year. He's still more worried about the new iPod than he is his training yet. But we're getting there, and I'm really proud of him as well. But my life has been, you can focus on all the negative. I don't know what all of this is about. I certainly don't ever want to diminish what people go through as parents that lose a child. I just know for me, I have to be in a state of gratitude and the happiness that goes along with that. Tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, I'm flying down to Florida to spread TJ's remains on the island where we spend our summers. And that on Saturday, there's a celebration, and it certainly, as you can tell by me, will be a celebration. His fifth grade teacher that taught him how to read will be flying down from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. It will be a joyous occasion of TJ's life, and that's what happens when you use the law of attraction. And plus, at some point, right now I'm not able to do it because it's still so fresh with me, but I may be able to incorporate, help people grieving by using this concept. And it's still early for that, but...
Well, you certainly have a history of having used, as you just told us in the story of TJ, of having used your own previous experiences to reach people. You told us just now how you used your experience with eating out of a dumpster to reach TJ. And so as horrible as this experience is, I have to imagine that it's going to mean that you're going to have other people coming into your life who have had traumatic losses, especially losses of children, and you're going to be able to reach them because you've been through the same thing.
Well, and that's the piece that I'm hopeful that I will find the same connection. I never thought me eating out of a trash can would ever be a plus in my life. I am so grateful now that I ate out of the trash can because it is the piece that connected with me with TJ, and even though his life was short, it changed his life as well as mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a positive. So, earlier I mentioned, and part of, you know, when people are talking about dealing with traumas and stuff, the event of the trash can never changed. It's a consistent event. I ate out of a trash can. That never changed. My perspective of me eating out of a trash can has drastically changed. It went from one of the worst days of my life to one of the most, I can't say best, but it was the greatest, one of the greatest turning points in my life. And I survived it. Now, all this stuff that's happened, well, I've survived. I'm still here. And I'm passionate about what I do. And I'm even more reinforced by all this recent stuff has re-energized me. And I hope no one listening by any means thinks that I'm joyous my son is dead. Obviously, that is not the case.
Sure.
But the case that the joy he brought to my life cannot be diminished by the sorrow of his loss. I cannot allow that to happen.
And that's probably the best way that you can honor who he is, because he continues to exist. It's not like he doesn't exist anymore. He just doesn't exist in the human form.
And I talk to him daily, just talk, and as he's there, and I do believe he's there. You and I have talked about this before, Walt. I am a believer that you can't kill energy. Energy doesn't die. The physical being, we're all going to die. But the energy and the spirit, it goes on, and we will be reunited, and that's a comfort. And we live in a time with so much negativity, and we're imploding on ourselves with, you turn on any news, and it's whether it's some horrible disease killing everybody or people chopping people's heads off, and we start to believe that's the reality. And then that creates a spiral toward our whole attitude. And that's not my life at all. I intentionally don't watch the news because of that. It's, I'll read the headlines.
That's how you become a healthy person, just by making that decision. Just by not watching the news, or at least if you have to look at the news, don't inundate yourself with it. You know, get the part that you need, put it aside, and then focus on the good stuff in your life so that you can be attracting more of it. And that's really the lesson. Joel, we're out of time, I'm afraid. But as usual, you've been a great guest. You've had some fabulous things to tell us about. And I really do want to thank you for telling us a really difficult story, too, because it's important to balance on both sides. But you've come through it great, and I'm sure you'll continue to do so.
Well, Walt, I look forward to keeping up with all you're doing. I'm so proud of your success, and I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Oh, absolutely. And you own it. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad to have your insights on this.
Same here. Thank you so much, Joel, for sharing your story. You've inspired all of us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Joel Elston from October 2014. Next week, we'll have another replay from the past, and then prepare for a special announcement the week after that, because it looks like I'm getting a new co-host, and you won't believe who it is. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.